Fresh Tech Network. Welcome, one and all. Just at the real top of the show here, the audio on the last one, I'm just going to say right out in the open before Alison has any shoots me down or anything, it was not Alison's fault on the last show. Her audio was pretty crappy coming in, but it was entirely at my end. I had some all sorts of issues. So I just want to say, I apologise, Alison. Your audio was perfect coming to me. It was entirely my fault. I am sorry. I bow down to your greatness. And we'll move on from that, because there's enough said on that side of things. I have a fantastic panel tonight to talk about some three superb stories. We've got quite a couple of meaty stories actually to get into tonight, but so just to start, we have Mr. Chris Ashley from the SMR podcast. How are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys? Glad to be back. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. You've made a couple of appearances in other shows in the meantime since you were last on here, haven't you?
Yeah, but you know, I always got to come back to the original.
Yeah, indeed. Contractually. We also have Dor from Android App Addicts joining us again. How are you this evening, my man?
Big Paul. I'm doing very well. Good. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad at all. We're in deepest, darkest winter. I don't know, you guys will still have daylight outside, but I've not seen daylight for a few hours now. So, it's all good here. We've got a thick fog coming in. It's all very picturesque. It's lovely here. And finally, we got Mr. Bart Bouchotz of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. How are you, sir?
I am doing just fine, and I think my weather is as bad as yours in the rainy Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, mine looks like a kind of a strange sort of 1980s horror film outside my window just now. All I can see is one street light and just huge amounts of fog. That's all I can see.
The street lights are broken on my street. I see nothing.
Oh dear, well, at least you can't see the fog. The fog's just a bit depressing, frankly. But anyway, onwards and upwards. Something that is not depressing, and I'm actually quite excited by this, is Microsoft banned. In the last show, we talked about how Microsoft potentially were bringing out a smartwatch of some kind. We saw some concept art from a Scandinavian gentleman whose name completely escapes me off the top of my head. I was quite interested in it. But what they've actually released is somewhere in between everything else that's out there. It's part watch, part fitness tracker, and part thing that gives you notifications on your wrist, and they're calling it Microsoft Band. It's already out in the States. So if you're in America, you may already have seen it. There's some reviews coming and everything that seem to be nothing scathing or anything like that. Everything seems to be fairly positive. But the big thing about this is that it's actually going to work with all platforms. Unlike your Apple Watches and unlike your Moto 360s and all sorts of other kind of Google technology and everything like that, they're completely locked down to their platform. The Microsoft Watch is going to work with everything. This is quite interesting. Chris, have you seen one of these? Have you had a play? What's your thoughts?
I've seen two of them, one on my wrist and one on my wife's wrist.
Well, there you go.
Bang.
Do you like it?
I love it. Yeah. I'm by no means a big fitness guru, but you know, I do my walks here and there, and my wife has gone on an unbelievable mission to lose weight, and she's lost quite a bit of weight over the last couple of months. So I bought her a Fitbit, and I guess I don't want to say common, but I've talked to a number of people now who have Fitbits that just they won't charge anymore.
All right. Okay.
So she was interested in this thing, and Microsoft just dropped it in her lap, and I had it in my online to order it, and I was like, you know what? I have a Microsoft store. This is about 30-minute drive, 20 to 30 minutes. I'm gonna run out there because I got big hands and big wrists, and I wanted to make sure the large would actually fit me, and to my surprise it did, and it fit me very well actually with some room. So I was happy to drive down there and grab two, and sure enough they sold out before the end of the day, and there were people down there buying them by the twos. It was kind of interesting to see how with the announcements of what Apple's coming out with, the announcements of Fitbit announced three beautiful looking smartwatches, and yet this thing still sold out. Now what I found to be impressive, but I like the band overall. I've read a lot of reviews on it, and I've heard a lot of people comment on it, and they vary. But some of the biggest things you see is people say it's bulky, it's a little bit big, and I say I get it. You know, I can understand. I don't find it to be that way. And after wearing it, you know, I've never wore a watch every day. I have a nice watch that I wear on going out, but I wear this thing every day since I bought it, and it just doesn't bother me. I sleep with it on. The only time I take it off is just to charge it. Microsoft touted that it got 2 days of charge time, and it does get 2 days of charge time, 2 days with a charge. But I haven't walked with it yet. So obviously turning on the GPS would then turn down. But my wife went to the gym with it and tracked her heart rate, and then it tracked her her calories burned, and you know, she was very impressed to see all the information it gave her.
Yeah, so also, it does steps as well, and the quality and length of your sleep as well. Which what does it actually tell you about that? Is it just whether you're having a restful sleep or something like that?
Yeah, essentially, at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to diagnose, is how well you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. And so I've done a sleep tracker quite a few times, and essentially you just go into the menu and you just go to turn it on, and then it says good night after you activate it. And when you wake up, you just hit the screen and it says, do you want to turn it off? And then you have a little report, and in that report it basically says how long it took you to fall asleep, how long you slept for, how much of that sleep was actually like really restful sleep, how many times you woke up. And that's the thing I think is surprising a lot of people, that at least in my circle, that they're like, man, I didn't realize I woke up so much. You know, it gives you your heart rate while you were sleeping. You know, and so it is kind of interesting to see, you know, that because you've heard it all your life that sleep, how important sleep is.
Sure.
To you, and it's kind of interesting to have this little thing on your wrist that's tracking it and actually letting you know, hey, dummy, you got to figure out something. You're not sleeping well. Mm-hmm. So I found that to be quite interesting.
Yeah. Some of the reports are coming in saying that the touch screen's a little slow. Are you finding that at all?
I don't find that at all. I don't think it's slow at all. I think depending on how you wear it, you may have to adjust your angles to interact with it. I'm still up in the air whether I like the orientation of the screen.
Sure. So you have to actually look at it on the inside of your wrist as opposed to kind of the front of your wrist. Yeah.
I wear mine on the top.
Okay.
Because that's traditional for me, and I don't have a problem using it on the top. However, it is certainly a lot easier to view when it's on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So what I'm talking about, folks, is the screen is basically rectangular in shape. And so it kind of goes along for most people, the whole width of your wrist. So when you're trying to look at the data, because the information on the screen is oriented with the way the screen is rotated, when you turn your hand over with your thumb pointing down, yeah, you know, it's a lot of data to kind of read, especially because when you look at an email that it can send you or a text, you actually get the first couple of lines in the email. Mm-hmm. So it can be a little bit cumbersome. But once you get used to it, it's not that big a deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've just realized it's at 90 degrees to what a watch should be. I was just took out my wrist to look at the watch I don't have. But the writing goes exactly the other way. So
right.
That is a
bit. Most people wear their watch on the top, right? So, but when you put it on the other side and you turn your thumb up, it's perfect. It's almost like you're holding a tablet. You know, when you cock your elbow inside your chest and then you just kind of holding like you're holding a tablet. And it's kind of the same concept. You know what I mean? When you hold it like that, and it's easy, you can flip around and do whatever you want. And so when I talk about this thing, you know, I can't sit here and honestly say that you have to have any type of smartwatch. Certainly, it's over the top. And I viewed it that way before I even bought the thing. But having it now, it has already changed the way I interact with my phone throughout the day. And so, you know, typically you would hear me say, and other people say this all the time, I don't need to look at my wrist to see who's texting me. I can just pick up my phone. You know what I mean? You're right.
That actually is a big deal. I mean, I wouldn't have believed it until this month when we started to get this new magic from Apple where your phone talks to your computer.
Right. Mm, yeah.
And it suddenly become clear to me that not having to worry about where my phone is, just being able to continue to do what I'm doing and get the information is actually very helpful, which tells me maybe I do want to watch.
It's more fluid.
I'm using the Pebble just now, and one of the great things is I can leave my phone sitting on charge on my desk at work, and rarely I go much outside, sort of maybe certainly Bluetooth range. All the meeting rooms are kind of around my office and stuff, and I could go to meetings, I can get around the office, and it isn't until I see a phone call from somebody I actually want to speak to that I actually have to make my way back to my desk to pick up my phone.
Right.
And I'm quite happy with that.
Well, yesterday,
go ahead.
Now, yesterday, I forgot where my phone was in the house. I didn't know where it was, but I was talking to my mom on the computer, and it just never occurred to me that I have no idea where my phone is. I'd been texting people all day. I'd just been carrying on with life as normal, and it was going through the phone cellular connection, yeah. But I didn't know where it was.
That's an awesome problem to have. Going along the lines of, the charging is, I use wireless chargers. I have one on my desk and I have one in my bedroom. And unfortunately, I sleep like a maniac sometimes, and I just start knocking stuff around. And the distance between my shoulder and my head, it's quite extensive. So because I'm a wide guy, so I need three pillows.
Right.
But if I get hot, one of those pillows got to go. It doesn't matter which one, but one of them's got to go. So, you know, I might and inevitably what happens is I knock my phone off the charger. You know, it doesn't take much. So I wake up in the morning, my phone is, you know, crying because it's half dead. And, you know, and then the rest of the day is a struggle. I'm on WhatsApp all the time. I'm checking my emails because if I have a document that I'm writing on my desktop, I tend to check emails on my phone and even respond to them. And if it's something long, then I'll just respond to them on the desktop. But I kind of like to leave what I have up on my desktop. So I'm very heavily attached to my smartphone. And of course, that kills the battery. Yeah, if I don't keep it charged, and always I put it on the charger, and within seconds of me putting on a charger, somebody sends me a message that I need to check. I pick it up, and then of course, by habit, I just put it down on the desk next to me, and I get back to work. But now I got my little watch on, and when I get these messages, I flip my wrist. Okay, I'm gonna respond to that later. You know what I mean? And I can leave it on the charger, which has been a significant change for my lifestyle. The other thing is, I was going to take a nap in my TV room. I love taking naps. And I was sitting in a chair, and I'm as lazy as it gets, let me tell you. And I put my phone on the charger and I laid down. And of course, I normally lay down with my head next to the phone, but this time I laid the opposite direction. So my feet were next to the phone. And you know, when you just doze off really quick, but then something is keeping you awake. Why? Because you forgot to turn off the lights and it's just a little bit too bright. And so I'm like, do I really want to get up and turn off the lights? Can I tough this one out and just go to sleep? Or should I switch sides, grab my phone and turn off the lights? Because I can control my lights from my phone. And then I was like, let me give this a shot. And I pressed and held the action button on the Microsoft band. And I said, switch TV room light switch off. And then my phone repeated it and the lights went off in my TV room. And I was like, this is wonderful.
Yeah, living in the future.
As I dozed off, it was great. But, you know, it kind of, you know, this is what these type of things do. It gives you these extra stuff that you don't need. But damn it, it's nice to have.
Oh, yeah.
I presume that the band is talking to Cortana, which is then communicating with an app, which is communicating with your lights.
You got it. You nailed it. That's exactly what's happening. And it's just nice that they added that extra touch to it where you can communicate with your phone, you know, and communicate with Cortana. So the phone gives you the watch gives you emails. It gives you text messages. It gives you basically any notification you get on the phone. So even if I get a Twitter notification or a Facebook notification, they even included a Starbucks piece where you can load your Starbucks card there. And then they can just scan your watch. It has a barcode that it produces. Of course, on top of doing all the fitness stuff, the heart rate monitor, the calorie check, the steps, the GPS tracking. It's a full featured watch. You know, even if it's not aesthetically pleasing to everybody, you can't really knock this thing at for 1.0 out the gate before everybody else comes out with something this solid. It's pretty amazing that what Microsoft pulled off here, because you know it's only going to get better. It'll get thinner, it'll get smaller, it'll come on different shapes. So I think they did a great job putting out this thing.
Yeah, definitely. What's your thoughts on the whole smartwatch thing? Are you interested in the Google Watch or anything?
Well, I've given away a Pebble, I've given away an LG G Watch, I've given away a Sony Smartwatch 2, and I have now an LG G Watch and another Sony Smartwatch sitting here waiting to give away, because I'll just say I don't think they're for me. Mm-hmm. But I already admit I'm not normal. I will say I do like everything that Chris was saying about that watch. The two questions I had was, one, I didn't hear you mention a price. I don't expect it to be less than $200. But I would hope it's less than $400.
What's a dollar less than $200?
Exactly correct. $199. Well, right,
that's a very fair price. Exactly. Now, the second question I had was, I heard some people complain about other devices, interfaces, and how they could not pick up your heartbeat unless you were perfectly still kind of thing. Is this the kind of thing that you use for a true health thing, like you're jogging and you can see your heart rate, or is it you have to stand like pretty much perfectly still to get the heart rate?
So I haven't jogged with it yet, but I have not heard about anybody complaining about getting the heart rate while they're doing movement.
Good.
Because obviously, good, if you're trying to get that heart rate in that target zone, if you're trying to do cardio or you're trying to do fat loss, you know, that's the purpose of it. So I think my wife, if I remember correctly, she said that she was monitoring her. Yeah, as a matter of fact, she did. She was working out with her trainer, and she was constantly checking her heart rate while she was doing it, and it kept updating. So I don't believe that to be a problem with this thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, to me, that's awesome, because I remember, I mean, I'm old. I'm in my 40s. I remember Microsoft way back in the day. I remember the Microsoft original mouse. I remember the original keyboard. I remember their wired base station, aka that they sold. Microsoft in their history has some of the most solid hardware I've ever seen in my life. And I want to see them compete, innovate, and to be quite honest, disrupt in places where people don't expect them to. And to me, this is a perfect avenue for them to just come in and say, we're not going to be locked in to this one make, this one model, this one service, this one type. Will be able to be used on all platforms. And I would expect it to work better on a Windows device. But if it works on all devices, to me, that just opens up the gateway for them to really quietly take over a area.
Out the gate, they support Android and iPhone. I have a buddy that uses it on iPhone. I'm not sure if I have one that uses it on Android yet. But yeah, you're right. And, you know, I really... You know, if Apple had came out with a watch that was cross-platform, I would take a look at that. Even though, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of their product, I would take a look at it because, you know, at the end of the day, it would be pretty cool. But they're not doing that. You know, no one else is really doing it except for Fitbit. And I had said that I'm waiting for what Microsoft announces. And I was like, if they don't bring the wood, which means they're, you know, that what they announce is really, really good, I'm going to get that Fitbit one. But they nailed it right out of the gate. And I love that they went cross-platform. I love the fact that Fitbit's cross-platform with what they're doing. You know, enough of this, you know, lock you into this. You got an ecosystem. People that want to be in your ecosystem will be in your ecosystem. People don't want to switch, but that doesn't mean you can't sell watches to people that are using Android. It's silly to me.
So hang on. There is a flip side to that, right? Because if you want to be cross-platform, that is an advantage. And it means that you can have the one device that will work with lots of different phones. But the feature set you get is always going to be a subset because it's going to be determined by the sum of what's out there.
Whereas I don't think there's a problem, though.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you'll see that the Apple Watch will integrate very tight, more tightly with iOS than is possible with, you know, that the Windows one will with iOS.
It's
a trade-off, right? Because for some people, one thing is more important, and for other people, having the full integrated stack is more important, because having an iPhone is cool. Having a Mac is cool. Having an iPhone and a Mac is not twice as cool, because they work together so well that there is an advantage in that. So,
well, yeah,
and roundabouts.
But here's the thing. Those are all well-established device interface things. This, to me, is still very new, very fresh. There's a lot of people who can come in and disrupt, because there's a lot of people out there making substandard hardware or just non-frill hardware. This is a good opportunity for someone to just come in and stand out.
Well, to me, Bart, I agree with you 100%, but I don't find that to be a problem, and here's why. I'm a Windows guy. I use a Windows phone. If Apple comes out with their watch and they make it cross-platform, I'm not going to know or even have a problem with the experience on an iPhone because I don't use an iPhone. So whatever experience is available to me would presumably be good enough. You know, I'm not saying just to put out any crap on the other platforms. You know what I mean? But put something out nice that fits within the capabilities and the user interface of the device that you're putting it on. You know what I mean? And then the hook, if you want to get people to use the iPhone, is like, well, you know, you get these things here, you get these five capabilities, but if you had it on the iPhone, you get these 30 capabilities. You know what I mean? And I think that's reasonable.
There's an R&D price for that.
I agree. You know,
it takes more effort to make something cross-platform than it does to make something for your platform.
And
wait, yeah.
I, Yeah, of course. But there's also, you're exposing your brand and you're exposing your potential revenue to a broader market as well. So, you know, something with Apple, you know, there's millions of Windows Phone users. There's even more millions of Android users. You know what I mean? So there's something to be gained. Yeah, absolutely. R&D costs. Microsoft paid it. You know what I mean? They're not as in any.
Yeah, but Microsoft aren't coming from a position of market dominance. Microsoft are coming from a position of very distant third.
This is true, but my point is the R&D costs, they still spend the money, right? You know what I mean? They still spend
Microsoft
the money.
Microsoft had to, because their addressable market percentage of smartphones is a little on the small side to go Microsoft only. So,
but
you know, to have a successful product, they had to go cross-platform.
But their business is enterprise, right? And this whole other stuff is basically extra money for them, or spend money for them. I mean, they make good money off of you know, non-enterprise sales. But, you know, at the end of the day, could they have come out with it? It's not going to hurt them. Even if they don't sell them, it's not going to hurt Microsoft. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. No, I think Microsoft did the right thing. I'm not arguing against what Microsoft did.
I get what you're
Apple
saying.
Following the example.
No, they're not. They constantly don't. You know what I mean? I'm just like, at some point, and you know, somebody's got to make the decision. It's like, guys, we can make more money by doing this. I don't believe that Apple doesn't put stuff cross-platform as a means of R&D savings or as a means of, you know, just...
No, it's they want to keep them in the ecosystem. I mean, that's...
Right.
That's but it. And then when they do go cross-platform, you end up with iTunes and Windows, which, you know, what a complete...
That's a reason for them never to try.
That also could have been just lack of effort.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That has got to be the single most awful piece of software conceived of by man.
Oh yeah, it's
to me,
it's fun.
You know that everybody hates it and it doesn't work well, and you don't do anything about it. I don't, you know what I mean? That to me is just like that's just an undersided hook. Like, well, it works better over here. Come on over. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. It doesn't work better on the Mac. iTunes 11 is also a piece of rubbish.
Yeah.
Or 12 or whatever.
There goes that theory. I have no idea.
It's not quite as bad. It's not quite as much of a resource hog, but they keep on ruining the UI. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know where my music was anymore when I upgraded to Yosemite. It was just...
You know, I've completely abandoned iTunes. And all it is now is that really annoying program that opens every time I plug an iPhone or an iPad in my Mac until I remember to switch off the fact that it switches on every time I plug in my iPhone or a Mac. That's all it does. Yeah.
Downcast saved me from iTunes.
Yes, yeah. So Downcast and Spotify has completely removed iTunes from my life, and Netflix, I guess, as well. Microsoft is even licensing the sensors, though, as well, which is really cool. So there's 10 sensors that they've built from scratch, or developed from scratch, so others can build new and different ways to measure your heart rate and step count and things like that. So that's really cool. So what they're basically saying is, here's our Microsoft Health, here's our platform, here's a whole pile of sensors, go away and see what you can do. You know, make a thumb ring that monitors your heartbeat or something like that as well. I think that's really cool. That's really, really forward thinking of Microsoft. This is not Bill Gates Microsoft anymore. This is clearly Satya Nadella.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you now. I am looking forward to all the disruption this guy's going to cause. I mean, he's putting Docker into Windows Server. He's finally getting back to a normal desktop. He's doing a lot of things right.
Dropbox in Microsoft Office.
And Office on all the platforms. Mm-hmm. This guy wants to take over the universe, and I'm going to watch in joy on what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think my eyes were open to the fact that there has been change when a guy from Microsoft stood up in front of a Microsoft PowerPoint with Microsoft logos and everything and said, yeah, so our cloud platform, we support, hits the button, and a penguin pops up. It's like, okay. There is change here. There is real change here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I say that hating Microsoft and hating their past and hating their lockdown and hating their DRM and hating their interfaces and hating their reps I have to deal with all day. But I want to see competition, and I want to see disruption, and I think these guys are on the right path after a long, long while being completely misled.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm happy for all the stuff they're announcing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's the smartwatch, 199, already available in the US. Absolutely no word of an international release yet, but I have to say it looks quite interesting. It does pretty much everything I want in a watch. It might actually, probably won't. I was going to say something that probably would never happen there. I was going to say it might actually pip the Apple Watch for me, but I don't think that's going to happen. while we're speaking of Apple, we have some malware to talk about. WireLurker. This is getting quite a bit of press, mainly scaremongering as far as I can tell. So you may have heard about this. This is WireLurker malware, which can attack your iPhone. It can attack iPhone and iPads that don't need to be jailbroken. I think this is the key. As far as I can tell, this is probably the first known or widely known malware attack that hits iPhones and iPads that are not jailbroken. The way it works basically is you have to go onto the Chinese app store, MyDai, I think that's how you pronounce it, with your Mac, or on a jailbroken iPhone, download a piece of software, or one of the, I think it's 45,000 or something like that, 450 apps, there's been, I've lost my numbers now, 356,000 downloads of these 450 apps. And in these 450 apps, some of them have malware. If that gets onto your Mac, and then you plug your phone in, jailbroken or not, this malware can get onto your phone. Now, as far as
hang on a sec, though, that's not strictly true.
Really?
It can, the bits can get there, but it can't run unless you also accept the provisioning profile.
I missed. Well, I'm glad you're here.
99.9% of the media, they consider installation the act of putting ones and zeros on the drive. But the fact that the OS will refuse to run those ones and zeros, they somehow leave out because it makes a much better headline.
I saw nothing. I've read. In preparation for this, knowing that you were going to be on the show, I made a huge amount of effort to try and research this story.
I'll send you the link. Intego have it screenshot by screenshot, listing out all the dumb things you have to do to get infected with this, and you have to accept an unsigned provisioning profile.
Okay, so that's... Right, okay, so now, I knew on the Mac that you had to accept that. I didn't know you had to do that on the iPhone.
Yeah, so on the Mac, you just have to say, run code from a non-signed developer. So that's not really a scary interface, and lots of people say yes to that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it's when you plug in your iPhone, it pretends to be iTunes, and it pushes the ones and zeros onto your iOS device. And so they're sitting as an application. But if you click the icon to run it, it won't run because it doesn't trust the digital signature until you accept the provisioning certificate. And that will say, please, to run this software, you need to accept blah, 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 blah. It'll have some made up name and it will say unsigned because it will be unsigned.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to agree to that. And anyone who accepts a provisioning profile they weren't expecting is an idiot.
Yes, I absolutely. I didn't appreciate the provisioning profile happened on the phone as well. I thought it was just that you had to accept the software on the Mac, and then once you plugged it in, it automatically went on the phone. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's using the end. So if you run a company, you can have a private app store.
Mm-hmm.
And work, you have to give a provisioning profile to everyone in your company, and then they can run apps assigned by your private app store. So there's now a malicious private app store. But if you don't accept that profile, you can't run it. So it's installed in the sense that it's there, but it's not installed in the sense that it can run.
However, the other scenario is you've jailbroken your phone, you've went on to MyDai App Store, and you've downloaded one of these games or apps or something like that, then in that scenario there, it's perfectly plausible that you would accept that certificate. Now, part of me kind of says if you're going to go away and steal software, you deserve everything you get. But the other side of me kind of says that's a scenario that it's perfectly plausible you would accept unsigned because you're going, yeah, it's probably unsigned because it's a bit dodgy and it's free and I've gotten it from this dodgy app store. So in that scenario, it's perfectly plausible you would accept that.
Then, yeah, I go with cyber Darwinism on that.
Except
right.
Yeah, definitely. And also, the other thing that kind of has been missed is it's almost assumed that everything in the App Store, now, to be clear, I'm not suggesting that you should go and pick and choose things in the App Store, but in the MyDai App Store, but it's everything. So even things like Sims 3, so there's a kind of a top 10, I think it was in The Verge showed this, was a top 10 number of downloads that have WireLurker infected in The Sims 3 from the MyDai App Store before people stopped downloading The Sims 3 from the Apple App Store. Was the number one, and it's because what they actually do is they take the game, then crack it open, stuff the malware inside it, pop it back together again with sticky tape and glue, stick it back at the store, and then people come along and take it, because this is normally, you know, a £5-10 app. But yeah, it's interesting that it's the first one that's managed to get through non-jailbroken phones, though. And it's, I suppose it's just a matter of time before we get another one that misses out this whole provisioning step, albeit Apple have put stuff in place to remove that.
But if you miss out the provisioning step, you haven't actually broken anything yet, because the whole point is iOS only runs signed code. So if they make you accept the signature, then nothing is broken. That is actually behaving as designed.
Right. Well, yeah, and it makes sense that if you don't need to be jailbroken, that you literally need to jump through multiple hoops in order to get this. I'll just say I'm happy that it's not just iPhone. Apparently, there's WireLurker for Windows as well. So they're spreading the love.
So the bad guys are putting the R&D in for cross-platform.
Exactly.
If you do get on your phone, all it really does at the moment is it can read your address book and read iMessage, and it also potentially can get to command and control server, which potentially could control your the infected iPhone wirelessly as well. Supposedly, it's been around for about 6 months now, and it was Palo Alto Networks, a security company, that first reported the breach and said that hundreds of thousands of iPhone users may be infected. But as far as we're aware, there has been no infections noted outside of China as it stands. Because I think one of the main things is the, I may be wrong about this, but the My Dai app store is in Chinese. So you need to be able to read Chinese to be able to actually navigate about it anyway.
I'm looking at a screenshot here from that Intego post I mentioned, which shows the provisioning profile coming up. Mm-hmm. And the application and the developer are a bunch of Chinese characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really tired of hearing people post things about infections and malware and rootkits and all this and all this and all this and all this. And then you have to literally look 8 paragraphs in and then you find out, wait, oh, this is only happening in China. I don't care.
Or it's a Trojan. Therefore, it's not this dangerous thing that's spreading. It's something people are doing to themselves.
Right.
It's something to be aware of, I guess, for some people. It's something to kind of put, because it's entirely possible. I mean, yes, okay, we've got these big red flags that are the Chinese characters and the developer name. And yes, to get it off the My Dai app store, you need to be able to read Chinese or at least be able to understand it, the basics of it. But it's just a matter of time before this thing comes out in English and everything looks entirely plausible. So, for example, if you went onto a dodgy app store and downloaded The Sims 3 and the provisioning profile says, are you sure you want to open this application from EA 2? For whatever reason, maybe the provisioning profile EA is taken. A lot of people might actually say continue. I think I would imagine most people who don't really know what they're doing would accept it at that stage. So we could say that it's because it's in China. Yes, okay, we don't need to worry about it right now. But what it's done is it's shown that there is an issue here, and the only thing that it's falling down about at the moment is Chinese characters.
But you see, the thing is, to me, this should be a story, but the story should be, folks, this is why you should be suspicious of provisioning profiles. Whereas the actual, no, everyone's leaving that out by just not mentioning the provisioning profiles. And it's supposed to be a teachable moment. This is the kind of thing you use to educate people, but it's just the opportunity is being wasted with clickbait headlines.
Ding, 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 ding.
I literally was about to say the same thing, because we do a lot on our show when stuff like this comes out, as we take a moment and let people know. I'm glad that this stuff becomes big news, even though it shouldn't be, because folks, do not click on stuff that you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that goes for any platform, any platform, interface, any operating system.
God bless my mom. She'll call me and she was like, I got this email. It looks weird. I'm like, delete it. I don't even let her finish. I don't care what it was. If it looks, delete it. You don't need it.
Good boy.
The default answer, right, should be to be suspicious of things. You shouldn't trust by default. You should be suspicious by default.
Yeah. And every time I get one of these weird emails, I actually take a screenshot of it and I put it on Facebook. And I just tell people, like, this is ridiculous. You know what I mean? And I make sure I post that picture so people that I'm friends with realize that, you know, don't just go clicking on and trusting everything that you see on Facebook or everything that comes in your email. So I make a habit of taking these dumb emails like one of them was supposed to be for my bank, but they spelled the bank name wrong. And then I kind of, you know, copied the URL out and showed that it was going to, you know, God knows where, but it wasn't going to the bank. And I was like, you know, these are little things you guys can look for to see that this is a foolish email. You know, don't click on everything you see.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my wife got hacked. It was probably about 6 months to a year ago now, and they managed to actually get in her email, and I still don't know how, but they got from her email into her bank account, and what they did was transferred the money out to people who they recognised in the little drop down list of recipients, and managed to match that up to email addresses that was in her inbox. So they sent out somewhere in the region of about £4,500 out to all these different places. Yeah, out to all these different places. And then sent emails to those people saying, I've had my account hacked, they've closed my account, but here's the new bank account details. Yeah, it was a really smart way of doing it. The only thing that fell down, though, which is why I'm telling the story, the only thing that fell down was their English was horrendous. And so all these people are getting these emails going, that doesn't sound like Kirsty wrote that email.
You know, you would think that if you're running these elaborate scams, I guess they don't really have to, because they actually work and they make billions of dollars doing it. But you think they would tighten up their typos and their English language a little bit? You think they would tighten that stuff up?
They don't need to. As long as they get 1% return on investment, they're fine. Why do any more work? It ain't worth it.
I guess so. I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, even 0.01 is probably enough to make a killing.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. Even, I mean, I that's a fair point, because I mean, I did kind of sit there and think, you know what, half an hour of going through and reading her emails, you would understand how she words her email messages. You could probably have huddled something together that actually made sense, but hey ho. We managed to get all the money back, so it worked out in the end, but oh well. Yes, so the key here is, do not accept anything that looks a little bit dodgy. Do not accept provisioning profiles unless you know what a provisioning profile is, because chances are, if you don't know what a provisioning profile is, you shouldn't be using one, unless somebody's don't pirate software. That's the key there. Don't pirate software. And finally, the last thing we want to talk about is the Android 5 rollout. We have news that LG has finally announced that their G3 will be the first device to receive the all-new Android 5.0 Lollipop starting from next week. It will start in Poland, and then we'll move out to other markets, for example, the United States and the UK. As far as we're aware, the LG is the first to offer 5.0 upgrades. You've been able to get the Lollipop if you bought a Nexus device straight from Google. Have you managed to get your hands on a 5.0 Lollipop device yet, Dor?
I've played with the interface. I root and ROM everything I own. If I could root and ROM my toaster, I would. I will say I do like parts of it. I am incredibly annoyed at the notification wanting to pop up, like AKA 1998. IE pop-up windows. I don't get that, but everything about the interface is unbelievably smooth and light. I will say, with the last three versions of Android, they've gotten consistently lighter and a little bit feeling snappier. Now, I will say I have a little bit of unfair advantage, I think, to the average person. I have a OnePlus One, and this thing just runs like a beast, like an absolute uncanny, uncaged, caffeine impaired beast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you are running on that on very new hardware, but I've heard good things about, like, even the early Nexus 7s have got a whole new lease of life with Android 5.
I definitely believe it. I do think they're leaning more towards the Android Silver model of hardware, where they want Android to work great on lower end hardware, and then if you happen to have great hardware, well, then it's just going to run better.
Right. Okay. Have you used any of the personal unlocking? We talked about this briefly in the last show, but I really like the idea. We had Alison and Alan on in the last show, and I think both of them were fairly negative towards the idea, but have you used any of this stuff yet?
Excuse me?
The personal unlocking, where it learns where you are and what devices you use. I believe it can even kind of do something with your voice as well, to verify that you're on the device, and then allow you to kind of unlock it and things like that in certain places.
No, I'm a Linux weenie, so I know any way that the phone can be automatically unlocked is a way that police or someone I do not want my phone can have access to it. So I haven't used any of that. I do see a fair amount of users, I mean, gravitating towards that and abusing it, but not for me.
Okay. I quite like the idea of not having to unlock your phone in your house. That's quite nice. But then again, to be honest, the Touch ID on my iPhone just sort of negated that to a degree, but it's still quite nice.
Well, there's plenty of solutions out right now. You can use NFC tags to when you hit the tag, it will turn off your lock screen, hit it again, it can turn it on. You can have Bluetooth on your computer or on your laptop or on your smartwatch or on your Ring or on your headphones. Any of those things say, okay, now never lock my device. I just keep the device on me at all times. It turns off in less than 2 seconds. And when it first boots, it has a encrypted passkey you got to enter. After that, there's no lock screen. Because if you're that close, you can get my phone. God bless you.
Wait, what if you'll lose it, though?
I'll buy another one. And
no, everything... Okay, you can get another phone, but you can't necessarily deal with the identity theft that could result.
I can, well, first off, nothing on the phone that they can access is not password protected. And I have multiple apps on the phone where I can remotely wipe or remotely manage the device or even remote into the device and manipulate it.
Well, if you can remote wipe it, I guess you're okay. But if they can just read your email, that's enough to hijack an awful lot of your accounts.
Once you open up your email, you get presented with a LastPass style login.
Huh. Yeah, I tell you what, I'm all for, I talk about this a lot as well, is I really want to stop carrying a wallet. I actually went to renew my driver's license today. Thankfully, for the first time in, I've been driving since I was 18, so the first time in 22 years, I was in and out of the MVA in under 15 minutes. I couldn't believe it. The lady was so efficient. She was like, "You have a license? Let me see your license. Sit down, face the camera, take a picture. Can you see? Do you wear glasses? Should you wear glasses?" You know, it's pretty funny. Take a test. Boom, 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 done. You know what I mean? But I was like, what? Why can't I just show my phone?
Dude, like, it's coming. Dude, trust me. Trust me when I say this. I know. The federal government and all is already heavily in the idea of a digital ID. I used NFC. I went to Columbus, Ohio for a conference, aka a drinking event. And I used NFC on my phone to pay for everything. I never once had to pull out my wallet. The only time I had to was when I pulled up to a toll. Turns out they needed less than 20. And I had a $20 bill on me, so I sat there until a guy came out of a manhole cover and gave me change. But that was it. And very soon, you're going to be able to basically hold up your phone, and there's going to be some sort of kick back, link down, authenticated, you are who you say you are. The days of paper IDs or physical IDs is coming to an end quickly. Yeah,
the ID, Softcard just announced that last week they came out with an app for Windows Phone finally. Really bums me. Again, this is where we talk, Bart, with the cross-platform stuff. The Apple Pay seems like a very interesting thing to me. You know what I mean? Which, honestly, a lot of people are looking for a solid way to do mobile payments. And it's just like, again, as much as I want to stop carrying a wallet, I am not buying an iPhone just to use Apple Pay. That ain't going to happen.
Why do you need Apple Pay?
You realize the Apple
Pay. What's wrong with it's NFC.
Yeah, Apple Pay is an implementation of the standard, which is also used by Google Wallet. What Apple have done different.
For 2 years now.
Yeah. The only thing Apple added that's new is that they have this concept of the secure element to physically store that stuff in a safe way on the chip. But in terms of the credit card transaction, in terms of the once you boop it against the little boopy thing, it's the same as any other NFC card.
No. So don't get me wrong. I understand what they're doing. But to me, it just would have been so awesome. They're like, we're coming out with a way to make, as a person that would be running a company, I'd be like, we're going to take over mobile payments, period. We're going to cut out, we're going to, basically gank all the anybody else that exists. And we're going to gank any of the current credit card guys. We're not going to let them get a foothold. We're going to do this. We'll make our little profit off of it and then just make their system. I don't understand why people don't want their system to be the de facto. That's why I'm so pissed off with PayPal. PayPal should have been it should have been a no-brainer.
Yeah, PayPal are asleep at the wheel, definitely.
I don't know. Yeah. Somebody should be kicked in the shin every day. As soon as he goes to work, he stands up and everybody who works there just boop, have a good day.
It's the same. This is the same company that completely screwed up eBay too. I mean, and they completely screwed up Skype. I mean, they don't have a great track record of success. No. I'll say the only thing I like about the Google Wallet compared to the Apple Pay is the Apple Pay has a more direct line to a bank account. I like the fact that Google Wallet, I can put in any card I want. So I can literally go to the store, get a gift card, keep putting money on that gift card. And then if something happens and that gift card gets compromised somehow, they're only going to be able to access the money that I pre-allocated on that gift card.
And you know, the soft card application does the same thing. They have limited credit cards they work with, but they have the same type of feature with American Express. You can get an American Express card. Right. But it's not to say that Apple has to do this stuff. I just want, like, for me, looking at this industry that's budding, I just, you know, for me, I want to talk about it as one guy. You know what I mean? I understand it's a little bit of a monopoly or whatever, but sometimes you just, you know, you don't want six or seven different guys doing, like, how annoyed are you when you go to pay for something at a gas station, at your local pharmacy, at your grocery store, and all of them have different swiping systems?
Yeah.
One you have to touch first. The other one you have to swipe first. This one you have to say, you know, answer 45 questions before they'll, you know, check you out. Can you guys just get together and get one system in place?
Okay, I'm sensing a distinction between the two sides of the Atlantic here.
Yes,
this is all, what are you talking about?
Yeah, right. Chip and Pin's been here for a while.
No, I'm just talking about the normal little credit card swipers that you use when you go to a gas station. Oh, you guys don't swipe anymore, sorry.
Yeah, we don't worry. Don't worry, all that will be fixed in like a year.
But it's something like that. So I guess you guys can't relate to what I'm saying. But I guess
because we either touch it or we stick it in. But that's it, and there's no weirdness about it.
If you will,
if you will, that's terrible out of context.
Yeah, I hope you buy a drink first.
Yeah. Well, but, see, I am so anally OCD. I have an app on my phone called MasterCard PayPass. MasterCard PayPass is the de facto system that Google Wallet is using on its back end. So I load that app ahead of time when I'm heading out, and I know all of the places ahead of me that do NFC, and I literally plan my day out. Well, I need to go and get this. Well, I'm going to go to that store.
Yeah. Right. Do all your friends use Android phones?
Well, I'm a dork, so I don't really have a lot of friends. One of them has an iPhone, and every time I come around, he like puts it in his pocket. He's, I don't know, I guess he's afraid I'm going to step on it or something. And I've literally asked a couple of my coworkers who are Windows zealots. I said, well, then you have to get a Windows phone. Don't go for something just because your niece has it or what. No, get what you would like to get. And so I'm trying to talk them into it.
Yeah. And what about you, Bart? All your folks use iOS and Apple products?
Well, when you say, my direct family just happened to, by accident, have all ended up with iPhones. But no, in sort of my greater circle of friends, it's very much 50-50 between Android and iOS. And there's one guy who has a Windows phone, but all he does is swear at it. He's counting down the days to April when he's entitled to an upgrade.
Tell him to come talk to me. Let me get him squared away. Get him back.
He's on the second one. He's not right. Not well, keen.
But I guess what I'm looking for is the fact that all of us on this podcast are probably IT for the majority of our friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
And to me, I just appreciate the ability to be like, oh, you want to make mobile payments? This is how the system. I don't want to have to go grab my iPhone that I have in my drawer underneath all of my other crap. And then I say, let me load up this thing so I can walk you through how to do it. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to go grab my Android, which is sitting underneath my desk right now, holding up the trash can because it tilts a little bit. And then I say, let me load this thing up and see how it works. You know what I mean? I'd rather just say, basically, this is what you're looking for in a system. And I like standardization when it comes to certain things. And when it comes to my money, I want that standardized. You know what I mean? So I understand why people don't do it. Yeah. I get it. You know what I mean?
It's getting, I think, standardized. And I'll say this, and just to make things clear, I told my wife, you either get an Android or you go to someone else for support. I have no problem admitting I'm a biased fella, and I have my goggles on. I have no problem with that. But here is the question I really have for you guys, because you guys definitely seem more mobile, cross-platform friendly than I. I keep hearing these tech journalists, and I don't like listening to tech journalists. I like listening to real people. You guys all are real people. I keep hearing the tech journalists say Google is getting better at design faster than Apple is getting better at apps or ecosystem or whatever, however you want to put
the cloud,
it.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds valid to me, but I'm looking through my goggles and okay, yeah, sure.
I think that Google is getting better at the user experience. I don't know if I would necessarily pin it directly on the design. And what I mean by user experience is kind of coming away from the user experience of the web and kind of that whole Google Now type idea, whereby it sort of knows what you want to do. And it's actually getting really, really good at that. And it's something that when I used an Android device last summer, it's something that I missed when I came back to Apple devices, because they just don't have that. I'm going to guess and predict what you're going to do next with sort of a 98% accuracy. So the whole user experience side, yes, I do think Google is better at that than Apple, or perhaps getting better at the cloud. So I'd be inclined to agree with that if that was what they meant by that statement.
Well, having seen what Apple did this year with 10.10 and with iOS 8, I think Apple are showing that when it comes to giving people the advantages of doing the whole widget, that's what they have, and that's their thing that no one else is copying yet. No one else is certainly doing it to the extent Apple is. But there's pros and cons to everything. The thing I hate most is when someone says, which is the best phone? Because to me, that's a stupid question.
Oh, yeah.
The question is, what's the best phone for me?
Exactly.
For you?
There's quicker way to get me lit up than someone saying, what's the best?
Oh, it's like, yeah, is Mozart better than Eminem? I don't know.
I know.
That's not just listen to the Beatles.
Yeah, let me tell you why. I don't know if that's necessarily an argument worth even putting any weight to. It's because when you're out in front, as far as UI design and integration with other platforms and user experience, all of that stuff.
Yeah,
that what companies are going to do to compete or find out what area you're lacking in, and then they're going to focus a ton of R&D there. You know what I mean? So I don't necessarily say, okay, well, I don't give Apple a knock because Google came out with Google Now first, which was, you know, more geared around how you use the phone, when, you know, Apple did come out with Siri. If Siri didn't come out, is Google then going to make out Google Now? They got to put it out and figure out how to make it different. You know what I mean? Now it's up to Apple to catch up and get that in there and then take the next leap. You know, you see what Cortana did. They looked at both and said, okay, we're going to take, you know, what we can from both. And that's just natural. I don't know if you can say one is doing something faster than the other. I just think it's typical and why we love competition, because when you have one that comes out, the next one got to be better to compete.
Yeah, but yeah, I agree with all that. What I was meaning with the Google Now thing was less about the voice activation and things like that, and it was more about the predictiveness of it. And I don't think any of the... I wasn't necessarily complaining that Apple haven't done that. I was just trying to understand if that was what they meant.
Don't get a guilty conscience. I wasn't speaking about what you said in general. I was just saying, you have voice, and then they're like, how can we make voice better? Well, why don't we make voice that interacts with you more personally? That's what Google did. That's what Cortana did. It's natural, and this is why we love competition.
But I think they're kind of focusing on different areas, and then that's fine, and that's great. They're obviously looking at what their customer base wants. But there is a lot of features that I do look over the fence at Windows and at Android and go, oh, geez, I wish I had that.
Everybody does, and if they say they're not, they're lying.
Ding, ding, exactly.
Cool. Good discussion. I would just like to thank quickly before we move on to our picks of this week. I'd just like to mention Patreon. Thank you very much for everybody that's been donating to our Patreon fund from this point onwards. If you head on over to the British Tech Network and click on support, you will see at the very top of that page our link to our Patreon fund. Or if you just search for British Tech Network on the patreon.com website, you will find us there. Anything you could chuck our way, we really, really appreciate. We've almost... Well, we did have the Northern Studio up and running until I broke something 2 days ago, and now we're going to have to fix it again. But the Northern Studio has basically been put together thanks to your Patreon fund, your Patreon donations, so we really, really appreciate it. So please head on over and give what you can. Really appreciate it. If you can't give anything, that's absolutely fine too. Just keep listening. Send us emails and things like that if you want to support us that way. Do whatever you need to do, but we appreciate it either way. Also, the other people that support us is UK2. They have been supporting us for 5 years now, and they are going to continue to support us for many years onwards. They provide domain names, web hosting, VPNs, VPSs, all that kind of cool stuff. If you want anything related to building a website or a web presence, head on over UK2, but please use the click through on britishtechnetwork.com and click on the sponsors link and you will get through there. The voucher codes are all on the sponsors page on britishtechnetwork.com. Just pop them in when you get to your cart and it will take the cash off of your account. They're absolutely superb. I'm personally a customer of UK2 and I love them. And if you want to use them in the States or anywhere else in the world, you will have to convert from pounds, but you can use them. So you'll have to pay in the Queen's pound when you're buying from UK2, but you can use them anywhere else in the world. They're absolutely superb. It's UK2. Gentlemen,
well, hold on, wait, I gotta say this. Got people listening, I cannot implore you enough. Patreon.com, go there, look for the British Tech Network, and what you will see is they are over 75% of their way towards their milestone. I beg you people, go out there and complete this, make them get to that milestone. I'm all in favor of supporting those who support you. And then to be quite honest, what you guys put out there is really good content. And I think people need to go out there and help you guys reach that first milestone. I think that'd be awesome.
That's very kind of you to say. Thank you very much, Dor. Yes, we are very close to that. So it'd be great if anybody can just reach into their pocket and give us what they can out there. That would be absolutely superb. But as I say, any support is welcome. If it's just listening to our shows and telling a friend about our shows, that's also appreciated as well. But thank you very much for that comment there, Dor. Bart, do you have a pick for us this evening, sir?
I do. Speaking of making stuff work together, which seems to have been a bit of a theme this show, there's a lovely app called Command C, which is the Apple shortcut for copy. And what it does is it allows you to, through the magic of push notifications, to send your clipboard to or from any iOS device or Mac. So it can be iPhone to iPhone, it can be Mac to iPhone, it can be Mac to Mac. Any permutation you like, it's a little menu bar thing in the Mac. It's an app on iOS, and you just click, basically you pair your devices, and then you just click on the device you want to shoe your keyboard or your clipboard to, and it arrives on the other end. It's when it works, it's spectacularly cool. I managed to find a bug today. If you send the XML data that contains a C data section, it gets a bit cranky, but I'm assuming that's because it's using XML to send the stuff. If you're just copying and pasting sane human things, it works perfectly.
That's pretty cool. Is it? And is it free? It looks like it's free.
It is free on the Mac side, and it is something... Oh, I should have checked the price. I believe it was about €4 on the iOS side.
It's $3.99 is the US one, so...
Yeah, I tend to count anything less than $5 as... It doesn't register. It's just, yeah, that's fine. So it's in that bracket.
Yeah, sure. $2.49 for the app on iOS, presumably iPad as well. Yeah, iPhone and iPad. It does work for both. That's quite cool. I will be purchasing that. That's a handy little app. Chris, what have you got for us this evening?
You know, I already talked about it.
Yeah.
You have got to go. If you're looking for an awesome smartwatch, and you know, like me, you like to test out a bunch of different platforms, you can't go wrong with the Microsoft Band. This thing is awesome. You have, like I said, you can get your email messages on the phone, on the watch. You can get your text messages. You can get WhatsApp notifications. You can get pretty much any application that sends a notification can show up on the screen of your watch. Plus, you get all the exercise stuff, heart rate monitor, sleep patterns, GPS. They've done a great job. You have two ways to wear it, on top of your wrist or on the bottom, whichever suits you better. At the very least, go check it out. It's $199 at the Microsoft Store. You know, I'm not sure if you can use it out of the country yet, how well it works, but I got to imagine it shouldn't be an issue, at least with the Bluetooth part of it. But don't hold me to that. I don't want any emails. But definitely check out the Microsoft Band. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. And to be honest, I think if Apple hadn't already announced theirs, I might have actually pulled the trigger on that. It does look very cool. But cool, very nice. And that's $199 if you're in the US. It's not been announced in the UK yet. So, and finally, Dor, what do you have for us this evening, sir?
What I have is a piece of hardware. It's called a Qbox, C-U-B-O-X, sold by solid-run.com. This is basically a 2x2x2-inch computer with everything from gigabit Ethernet, USB, HDMI, eSATA, infrared, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, microSD, optical audio out, all of the luxuries of a computer. This is a ARM-based computer that does come with a SD card that you can run Android on it. I will say right now mine is upstairs in my son's bedroom running Android 4.4.4. I have it rooted, of course, because that's what I do. But because of that, I'm able to add Bluetooth controllers as gaming pads.
Okay.
So I have it upstairs in my son's computer running a minimal launcher, and it is his gaming / Netflix computer in his room. And these span the price from around, I think, $75 up to $120. I got the $100 model, and so far I am utterly, ridiculously pleased with its performance, even when the games are high quality graphics.
Very cool. Okay, so what kind of games is it running? Is it kind of Minecraft-y, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. Minecraft Pocket Edition with a PS3-style remote gaming thing he's perfectly fine with. Right now, he's honestly playing a lot of Where's My Water and a lot of...
that's an awesome game. I like that game.
But he really loves a game called Neon Shadow, which is like Doom-esque looking better. Okay. Shooting aliens and robots and stuff. He's loving it.
Very nice. Very cool. So it's the Qbox, and they go from $79 to $139. Presumably they'll ship to the UK, or you can use servers like reship.com if you want to get it in the UK.
Well, they ship from Israel, so should get yours quicker than I got mine.
Very nice. Okay, cool. Grant, my pick this evening is it's sort of a side pick. It's the Google Authenticator app because it's the first time I've ever used it. I went through I've had a bunch of things on my to-do list for ages to set up two-factor authentication on a whole bunch of my apps. A lot of them send text messages to you, which is fine, and that's probably the easier way to do it. But a couple of them actually requested to use Google Authenticator. And to be honest, I've kind of put off doing it because I kind of thought, nah, I don't want another app on my phone, and it's just going to be a pain in the butt, and I can't really be bothered. And I took the effort of the weekend there to set up Google Authenticator on all of the apps that I needed to use it for. And it was so slick. I am so impressed with it. It just sort of works. Certainly the apps that I was using, it just kind of came up and said, would you like to use Google Authenticator for your second factor authentication? It scanned a QR code from your screen, and it then created a little six-digit code similar to the ones you get in the little key fobs for banks and remote access and things like that. And that was it, really. There was nothing more to it. It was an absolute breeze. So if you have been considering doing two-factor authentication and this whole concept of Google Authenticator app on your phone has been putting you off, then worry no longer. It's very, very slick and very, very easy. It's a free app, but you don't actually need the Authenticator app unless the service that you're wanting to set up two-factor authentication on requires it. There's only a couple just now that I came across. It was LastPass and Evernote were the two that required the Google Authenticator. But it worked really nicely, and I'm very impressed with them. So that's my pick. I have to admit, I'm going to do a kind of a side pick because I was going to mention this and then I realized it was maybe a little bit of a cop-out to make this my main pick. But I've been sticking a whole bunch of stuff on eBay recently because I'm very, very quickly running out of space in my office. Just piles and piles of tech that piles up. I'm sure you guys have a similar problem. And so my wife's been continuously complaining about this piles and piles of tech that are just basically they're not gaining any value. I'm not using them. I might as well be sticking them on eBay. And I went to put some stuff on last Sunday. And I noticed a button on the for sale page. And when you were adding an item, and it said add from my mobile device. And I thought, yeah, we'll see what happens here. And I pushed it. And what it does is it sends a notification to whatever device you happen to have your eBay account signed into. You then accept that notification, and it then takes you to the camera. You take a couple of snaps of the device or whatever it is that you're selling, wait a couple of seconds, and the pictures appear on your computer screen. I'm assuming it will be dependent on your internet connection. Mine's is pretty decent here, so it happened almost instantaneously. Maybe, I don't know, three or four seconds or something like that. But I imagine basically what it's doing is it's taking the pictures that you take on your device, sending them up to eBay servers, and then coming back down to your PC. But it was very impressive. So that's a quick and easy way. If you like the luxury of using a proper keyboard for typing in your product descriptions, but the convenience of using your phone to take photographs, it's quite a nice little alternative. But it's a little sub pick there for you as well. That's all we've got time for tonight. I want to mention the Northern Bash. That's on the 6th of December. Tickets are still available for that. If you want to come up, it's very similar to the bash that we have in the summer, our birthday bash in July, but it's in Scotland instead of being in Birmingham. So it's about 25 miles, 30 miles south of Edinburgh. Ewan's coming along, Will Green's coming along. I think Chris Woods, who's been on the show a couple of times, got the guys from the Gamer Show as well. Basically what it's going to be is it's just going to drink for the day. We've got a PlayStation, a Wii U, and Xbox on projectors. We're going to do a couple of shows from there. It's just going to be a regular laugh. We're going from 3 o'clock until midnight. We'll get a curry delivered at some point during the evening, and it's just going to be a bit of gaming, a good laugh, and just please come along. Tickets are £5, mainly just to cover the cost of the hall, really. So if you're doing nothing on the 6th of December and you want to come along to that, please do. If you happen to be anywhere in the Birmingham area, I believe Ewan still has one seat left in his car, so they're going to drive up early doors on the Saturday morning from Birmingham up to Scotland for the Northern Bash. So I look forward to seeing you there if you're coming along. All that's left to say is just to find out where we can get everybody. Chris, where can people find your work?
You can always find me on the wonderful SMR podcast. If you're looking for a fun time talking about tech, almost as much fun as we have on this show. I'm just kidding. It's more fun than we have on this show. You can check us out at SMR podcast, three real friends just kicking it. The interaction between the three of us is phenomenal. And when you listen to the show, you actually feel like you're one of ours, and you know, you start picking up on our terms, and all of a sudden you're calling your spouse names. Alla Allison, she's called her spouse a few names she learned on our show. So yeah, there you go. SMRpodcast.com, and you can catch me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley.
Very good. Dora, where can people find you?
The easiest way is just go to podnuts.com, podnutz.com. All the podcasts there I'm on and I support, from Podnuts Daily to Call That Girl to My Hard Drive Died, Android App Addicts, what's for the rest of us, yada, 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 yada.
Very cool. And they can find you Google Plus, because I believe you do not do the Twitters, do you?
I'm there. If you ping me, if you shout at me on Twitter, I'll be there. But yes, it's just door-to-door geek, DoorToorGeek.
Grant. And Bart, where can people find you?
You can find me and links to all of the stuff I get up to, Twitter, Flickr, all that kind of stuff, at bartb.ie. And you can get the Let's Talk Apple podcast at let's-talk.ie.
And there's also the Let's Talk Photography there as well.
Correct. Yeah, yes. They're both on the one site, actually. Right. So they're both on let's-talk.ie.
Very good. Very good. You can find me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech on Twitter. If you want to email this show or any other show on the network, it's britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more pocket-related conversation and other such nonsense. Thank you very much for your ears this evening. Good night.